Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You're scared of things that go boom, boom, boom.
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric, and sitting across from me once again is Michael. And you walked here today.
I did. I walked about 4 miles from my apartment to your apartment because it is 52 degrees out and there's like no freezing frigid Chicago wind and it's sunny.
Yeah, so 52 degrees, no wind, sunny. What are we doing today?
We're watching about 6 hours of film.
That's good. Stay inside, do a podcast. That's probably... it'll probably be dark by the time we're done.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. So we're trying new equipment again today. It's slow progress every time. So hopefully by the time people are actually listening to this, we'll have a fair setup in here. But
by the time it sounds really good, we'll start dishing out the bad ones.
Yeah, right. That's when all the good movies will be done. Today we have maybe one good movie and maybe one bad movie. Although,
I'm not sure which is which.
Yeah. if I'm going to guess, I'm going to say we probably have two bad movies today.
I think that's what happened.
However, you picked one you wanted to see. No, it was the other way around. Yeah. I picked one. I'm forgetting already if I wanted to see this film or not. No, I picked the one I wanted to see and you picked the one you did not want to see. So what are we watching today?
You picked The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and I picked Constantine.
All right. So it's a comic book double feature extravaganza. We didn't warn last time that there were spoilers. Not that I think we spoiled anything, but
those movies cannot be spoiled.
It should be pretty apparent that we're very new at this. So there's going to be spoilers in this podcast. We're going to be talking about some films. And if you, for some reason, have not yet seen it, anybody who wants to see either of these two films have seen them by now, right?
Probably.
No one's like, oh yeah, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, that's still on my Netflix.
That's you.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. That is me. Well, let's do your movie first, because we never do that. Okay. Let's get right on that.
Well, I'm just going to come right out and say that I'm never going to refer to it as League of Extraordinary Gentlemen after that point right now. It will now be LXG every time it comes out of my mouth.
Not leg? You're going to go with LXG?
Not LEG. No, it will be LXG, not leg. Maybe leg once. To throw you off.
I have to out you on your DVD.
Oh, yeah.
So what we usually do is we usually do one digital and one old school, if you will. We do a hard copy, right? Most of my movies are on Apple TV. So we'll watch, you know, my film digitally and then you'll bring over your DVD. You got tons of DVDs. However, this time we go to pop in your DVD first. And what do we notice about that DVD?
That DVD is in full screen.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. So I had a moment yesterday where I had to question, you know, normally full screen, never do it. I just won't do it. No. You're missing a lot of the film. If I really want to see it, I can get it later. No rush. Especially League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. However, podcast, really wanted to do it. And so I had to make a judgment call. Was I going to watch it in full screen or what? So what ended up happening, we debated the iTunes thing for a while, and then it became like 4 or 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning.
7 in the morning.
And before you knew it, it was time for normal people to start their days, and neither of us had gone to sleep yet. So I acquired League of Extraordinary Gentlemen in its 2:35:1 aspect ratio, which means we would have lost like half of it
at
watching
least.
It in full screen. And I wanted to give it every chance it had, right? Let's go over the little things I liked first. Now, you told me early into this film that however awful it was, there were like a handful of good redeeming scenes.
Two or three redeeming scenes in the film.
And as I'm watching it, you know, of course, I had to kind of look for those. The one thing I absolutely loved, so going into this, Stuart Townsend, like my only exposure to him has been in The Vampire Lestat or Queen of the Damned, rather. Which should have been The Vampire Lestat, but it was Queen of the Damned. Possibly one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Really, he could only put on an Oscar-winning performance from there. There's really no going down from there. One of my favorite scenes had to be like the black and white, I guess, what was that, a phonograph? It didn't play MP3s, whatever it was.
Yeah.
One of those things with the spinning discs and the large, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, that little kind of black and white sort of... projector looking where they shot that wouldn't have worked in any other film. Yep. But because it was surrounded by corny, cheesy goodness, let's call it corny, cheesy goodness, I was able to deal with it and I really enjoyed it. So maybe by contrast, that was a good scene.
Yeah.
Trying to pick out other good scenes, might have a bit of a hard time with that.
Yeah.
There's other things I enjoyed about the movie, not particularly parts of it. The movie kind of balanced telling little stories of like, maybe six characters or something.
Kinda. Yeah.
You didn't get full on background, but it never felt really too crowded. You kind of always knew who all the characters were and what they were doing and what the point was. There were stories and payoffs that I didn't care about. Sean Connery's kid. Who cares?
Yep.
Sean Connery, beyond his funny accent, really doesn't do a whole lot
for me. Too much.
However, isn't The Rock
the
on
Rock,
the list?
The Rock is on the
all
list.
Right, well, we'll have to get to that right away.
The Rock is a much better film than LXG.
Give me your scenes.
Okay, well, my number one favorite scene in the entire film is the scene where they're in Dorian Gray's library.
Uh-huh.
And all of the...
The first time?
Yeah.
And, okay, good scene. All
and
right,
the Phantom comes in there and all the guys surround him. And there's just the scene where everybody's like fighting and like doing their like superpower thing.
Right.
And in every single shot, it's just Dorian Gray walking. Just like you can see him in one angle of every shot,
right, sure.
Walking through his library. And right. You're like, oh, he's got somewhere to be.
Yeah. Which kind of plays in later when you sort of find out the, oh my God, what a twist.
Yeah.
But at that point, I think a lot of people are just kind of waiting for him to like, I don't know.
Explode.
Turn into a puff of smoke or like I form into a tiger or I don't know. We're all kind of sitting around going, what is this guy's thing? Yeah. What's he do?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get old, apparently. Mm-hmm. He's a complicated man.
Yeah.
Reminds me of the Shaft theme song, but let's not go into that. No one understands him but his woman. Is Shaft on this list? None of us have Shaft.
No.
All right, good. What are the other ones for you?
So
that was top.
That was my favorite scene.
Far and away, favorite scene.
I love that scene.
All right.
The other scene that I really like is the scene in the car when they're driving through Venice as it's collapsing.
Right.
I just like that. I think I like that because everybody just starts leaving the car.
Right.
And the car's like going 1,000 miles an hour. And then someone's like, I can handle this. And they jump out.
They just jump out and kind of walk away.
Yeah.
I remember. I'm not going to remember any of these characters' names. But Stuart Townsend's character.
Yeah. Dorian Gray.
Dorian Gray. He's just walking along at about the same speed as the car, which is going, I believe, 1 bajillion miles an hour is how fast
that
car was going.
I think something like that.
So here's something I have to bring up. Do you have other favorite moments of this film?
Well, there's the one, but I think it's the one you're about to bring up.
Oh, it's definitely not, because I wanted to comment on something else here.
Okay.
So we have this exchange between Sean Connery and the American Secret Service guy, who apparently is Tom Sawyer, not just Sawyer, from
Lost.
Oh, I was trying to hold off this whole first little segment here without mentioning Lost.
We gotta hit it again anyway.
It's impossible. you actually said during the film, what was that? Maps, boats, and islands. You were getting excited for Lost. We usually do this on Lost Day, so we got our last episode of Lost tonight. But this is not a Lost podcast.
No.
Or a political podcast. This is a podcast about two unfortunate films. okay. All right. So going back to what I was saying. Why go back? Let's just stay on that. Sean Connery and the American, right? Sean Connery and Tom Sawyer. I'm going to use one of them is more important as an actor and the other is more important as a character. And I think that should be blatantly obvious within the first 5 seconds of this film. Now, this guy, Tom Sawyer, doesn't have any power, right? He doesn't have any real expertise. His expertise is he's an American.
Yep. That's exactly his expertise.
I'm all right with that. That seems like enough expertise for me. There was a big expedition of people. Bring an American along. Some interesting perspective, I guess. I don't know. But what really bothered me in this film, like I can get over a lot of the cheesy elements. I can get over that it's old and it looks a little, it's 5 or 6 years old now. It looks a little dated, which I want to talk about in a second. But one of the things I couldn't get over is kind of this buddy cop relationship between Sean Connery and Tom Sawyer. It was like a... It was like all those bad cop movies from the 90s, you know, where one cop is like the, you know, he does it by the book and he's like the older, you know, let's say he's Tommy Lee Jones, right? He's the Tommy Lee Jones. Okay. Yeah, sure. And the other cop is kind of an urban, street smart, either. Well, I'm not going to make a 7 out of this. I would go more in the role of a Chris Tucker or a Jackie Chan or anyone from that entire series, actually. Yeah. But, you know, he's either the urban guy or he's kind of the
newcomer,
the far eastern guy or the newcomer. Yeah. You know, there's always that kind of scene where they're sitting in the car and the old guy's country on and the younger cop's like, this is whacked. And he turns on rap. You know, it's a buddy cop. Fucking movie. I hate those. I can't stand. Not even film. It's Tyler Perry all over again. This is exactly what those movies are. But it gave
you just offended 3 of our audience members, and we now have none.
Well, you know what? All the better. I'd rather podcast to myself than podcast to Tyler Perry fans. And I'll feel stronger about that when I actually see a Tyler Perry movie.
That will never happen.
No. So there's this dynamic where Sean Connery does things the old way. You know, he takes his time. He shoots slow. But the American, he just fires off. He just shoots whatever he wants. He doesn't even care. First of all, in that school of thought, just shoot everything.
Yeah.
Like, we're both first-person shooter fans, you know. We're not entirely unfamiliar with guns, although I don't think either of us is a great shot. shoot everything is a fine mentality. Maybe it's because we're Americans.
Yeah, that's probably what it is.
That's what it is. But I'm all right with shoot everything.
Maybe if we were Irish, British, of African men,
yeah,
we would shoot more slowly.
I like how that was a rifle or a shotgun, depending on what scene.
Well, yeah, it was just like the proximity of firing,
right?
Yeah,
just a change from one or the other. And back and forth, they had this constant thing where like, whose school of thought is better? Should you shoot slow or should you just shoot everything? And it just kept going buddy cop the whole time, and it drove me nuts. And it was one of the corny aspects of the film I couldn't deal with. I think, you know, everything else, as far as, you know, different things, corny or not, it's a comic book movie.
Yeah.
When you do a comic book movie, you expect those things, right? I mean,
yeah, there are a few exceptions to the comic book movie.
What do you think those are?
Well, there's Hellboy, which everybody will agree with, both you and I, or disagree, I mean, with you and I on that.
Hellboy is a great film.
Hellboy is an incredible film. Yeah, like incredible Hellboy, film. Independent of being.
Oh yeah,
a comic book
it doesn't
is
need
a great
that
film.
There are movies that need the. This is a comic book. Like, well, yeah. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen kind of has that. I think Tank Girl a little bit, which you'll see later. There's a lot of comic book movies you take with a grain of salt. They get away with one-liners because they're comic book movies. But Hellboy doesn't need that at all. Hellboy's just a good film.
And the first 2 X-Men movies, I would say, don't need the comic book movie thing.
Sure. Sure.
And Batman Begins. And then the two earlier Tim Burton Batmans before comic book movies were even in existence.
Right. Your other favorite scene from this?
Oh, it was the scene that you commented on while we were watching.
The outside the factory scene. Right.
Where it just shows it's after they've all – it's well after the tiger has gone back into the snow.
Right.
And they're waiting to go into the fortress, and it just shows this scene where there's 3 vents on this wall outside this fortress and a guard, and you hear Skinner's voice, who's the Invisible Man, and he says some like one-liner, you know, like hello, and then the guy just starts getting beaten up, so
with his own gun,
yeah,
his gun flies out of his arm and proceeds to beat the crap out of him,
and then while he's getting the shit beaten out of him, a bunch of bats start flying into the vents, obviously sent from Mrs. Dracula.
Right.
And then the other guard, who you didn't realize was there, who I would just like to take a second and point out, has been standing there watching his friend get beat up with his own gun, and then bats fly.
Well, what are you gonna do?
In Siberia?
Wow. All right.
and then he turns around and he's like, and then Mr. Hyde, the giant beast of a deformed man, just kind of walks up in like close out of focus frame. And then the guy in the back's just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And then scene ends.
It was short, and it was one of those things. It's just like surgical precision.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those moments you see in like Rodriguez has these all the time where it seems like things are just
You just lost the game.
I know. We had a game going to see how long we could go without mentioning Robert Rodriguez, but three podcasts into the show, I've pulled it. Well, we mentioned Planet Terror earlier, so yeah. I was like, you know what? I'll just let it go. A lot of his movies have that surgical precision. This like guy gets hit in the face here and then thing happens exactly on the right spot of the screen over here. And it reminded me of one of those scenes. Guy gets beat with the gun all the way on the left. They're slowly panning to the right. You have the bats that fly in over the top. And then off to the bottom right hand side of the screen, you have Hyde come in. And it just seems like it's mapped out almost with a sort of mathematical precision. And I really like scenes like that. Really well executed. So, as I mentioned earlier, the film was what, like 2002, 2003?
Yeah, maybe. 2002.
Okay. And it was in that era of films that used CG well enough for the day, but not well enough for now.
Right.
Right. And I've talked to you a little bit about this before when we've talked about Dark City, because Dark City was a very Burton-esque. It used models, yeah. You know, used a lot of models and handmade stuff and different methods of shooting things. To make stuff that you physically created in a real environment look like other things. To make models of buildings look like huge buildings. The mm-hmm. Gotham City thing. Mm-hmm. Movies like this came out sort of like in the post-Matrix or maybe even during the Matrix trilogy where people were like, you know what? We don't need models or any kind of practical effects. We can go all CG. And they had this over-reliance on CG, which totally worked in the day. You know, the giant party boat flying out of the water mm-hmm. was probably a mind-blowing effect. But it was almost laughable watching it today. Yeah.
Or the one that I noticed that I'd never noticed before mm. was when that mansion in the African village explodes. Yeah. And you can actually, like, there's an explosion. You're like, oh my God, it exploded. But if you look, you can just see that they just basically pasted an explosion over the mansion.
Right. Yeah.
And you can still see the mansion behind it.
Yeah. There was nothing.
And
about
it just
the
made
mansion,
me go,
actually.
Like, that was a special effect from 1978. Yeah. I think that was a Barbarella effect.
Right.
When Duran Duran exploded the organ.
Yeah. No. Except they probably actually blew up the organ yeah, there well, and pasted it in. And this was like, let's just take some stock of an explosion and we'll just copy paste.
Have everybody duck and put their hands in the
right,
air.
Right, right. Yeah, you could tell there was a lot of green screening on that.
Yeah, there
movie.
Was tons of green screening.
And, you know, probably looked fine in the day, where the day is, you know, 5 years ago or something. But today doesn't hold up so well.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that, the reliance on CG? Like, is that... Are well, these okay. movies all just going to be shot in 10 years? Or are we just going to have to do
remakes
of all of them?
Here's the thing. See, I don't know. And I mean, I don't want to be the one that keeps bringing up Robert Rodriguez and Tim Burton.
Too late.
But Tim Burton, I mean, as everybody knows, is the guy that never uses CG.
Right.
Like, he's all models, sure. all – like, he did Nightmare Before Christmas, which is all, you know, straight,
right,
everything.
Exactly.
But then he did Sweeney Todd. And Sweeney Todd is almost entirely CG.
Yeah,
and I don't think – and Sweeney Todd was up for an Oscar, which personally to me doesn't mean shit.
No, not at all.
But as far as things like that go, like Jurassic Park mm-hmm. and stuff like that, that was – that's there's computer-generated stuff in there. And those yeah. still – those dinosaurs still look real because there's part model work.
Right.
But then looking at Robert Rodriguez, if you look at like – I mean typical Rodriguez stuff is, you know, a lot of makeup, a lot of acting, a lot of like precision explosions and
right.
squibs and all like real effects.
Mm.
But then take things like Spy Kids
oh,
and
yeah.
Shark Boy, which is straight green screen.
Yeah.
That will always look fine.
Yeah,
because
that's true.
They don't, they're not, because he's not, he's relentless with it. He's like, this is CG. Look how CG
yeah,
this
it's
is.
Over
this
the
is
top.
Totally computer generated. Well, it doesn't matter how bad this looks
right.
because there's nothing better. It's just people and computers.
To the point where it almost went backwards by the time they got to Spy Kids 3D. We've now alienated our entire audience, by the way. If they weren't gone before, now that we're talking about the third installment of Spy Kids, there is literally no one left. But the third installment, I don't believe I'm saying this. I'm going to say this as serious as possible. In the third installment of the Spy Kids trilogy. I can't do it. I can't do it with a straight face.
Sorry. Think okay. of Tyler Perry. Talk about Spy Kids.
My point is that the first movie kind of blends a little bit of CG in. The second movie like
a
does the overabundance of CG. And the third movie is like, it's almost like when you have real people, that's the effect.
Yeah.
You know? And so those movies are stylized in such a way where the point is kind of that it's CG and maybe even looks a little goofy. And that's all right. The thing with League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is that's not necessarily the look it was going for.
Right.
It tried to do the realism with CG And that doesn't, you know, a lot of it is the textures I notice. I noticed it just from like playing Xbox games and then watching it, is that the Xbox games will look more realistic, you know, because they map textures. They basically have what League of Extraordinary Gentlemen has, which is these, you know, large computer generated objects. But I mean, once you start watching things in high definition, or we were watching in standard definition on a digital copy nonetheless.
Yeah.
And it was still pretty obvious that these effects were old.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. I guess time will kind of tell if that's going to be a problem or not. But you can look back on the model stuff and it looks great.
Right.
It's got this interesting look to it. Dark City, probably, I probably like it more today than I would have when it originally came out because it's got that stylized look to it. I don't know if CG will hold up the same way. Maybe by certain people, maybe not. We'll know when this podcast is still going 15 years from now, and then we can look back. Yeah. And when we're doing, you know, a double feature of like Spider-Man 16 and the 12th installment of Hostel, maybe. And then we can look back. Are you enjoying that?
I'm so excited for the 12th installment of Hostel. So real quick, since we're kind of running out of time for this film and things to say about it, I just want to comment on the casting for the film and the acting for the film.
Let's do it.
Okay. So, let's just section it out into the league. That's it.
All right.
Okay. Those are the only people that I care about.
Just the other people don't matter.
Totally irrelevant.
Were there other people in this movie?
No, was
the answer.
Phantom M.
Hold on. Let's try this again. Were there other people in the movie?
None.
All right. Great. Please continue.
I think there were negative other people.
All right. Great.
Okay. So you have Sean Connery as Alan Quartermain. Mm-hmm. Fine, whatever. You know, Sean Connery, throw him in a movie. He'll play that role because the role is Sean Connery.
Sure.
Doesn't matter. And Shane West as Tom Sawyer, worst decision ever because Shane West kissed Mandy Moore in A Walk to Remember, and that's all that ever has to happen in his career for him to be a failure.
Done.
Okay, so now we're down to four?
Four.
Okay, so the other four actors are fairly lesser-known actors. So you've got Jekyll, who is incredible.
Yeah.
Jekyll is a really good, because he also played Hyde.
Right.
Same guy.
Right.
Okay.
I got to take the CG for task again on Hyde. The one time they kind of tried to use some practical effects, I almost wish they went more CG.
Really?
Yeah. You know, Hyde, the transformation, I mean, I'm glad they went with that than something else.
Yeah.
But still, I don't know. I just saw a giant rubber monster over and over and drove me nuts. But let's not dwell on that.
Okay. So anyway, I don't know his name, but the actor that played Jekyll and Hyde.
Sure.
Totally good. Like, great casting choice for him. I think he's the most popular of the four. I'm going to jump back before I said that. Stuart Townsend.
Right.
Whose name I know.
Let's not forget Lestat.
Yeah. So the thing about Dorian Gray is, as far as I'm concerned, and this is no offense to Stuart Townsend because he did it better, but that part was written for Johnny Depp.
Yeah, no,
Do you disagree with that?
Well, part of it is the looks and the long hair.
It's Johnny Depp.
I mean, the physical looks that he gave. Yeah, it's a Johnny Depp role. He was the poor man's Johnny Depp in this, and that's fine.
But I think he did it better than Johnny Depp would have done it, because Johnny Depp would have swung his head too much. Like
I'm
this.
Not, yeah, yeah, that's.
You know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about, but none of the zero people listening none to this zero, have any idea what you're talking about.
Anyway, so Johnny Depp. Not in the film. Stuart
I can't
Townsend
agree with you anytime film. You ever say did this better than Johnny Depp would have. That's I would just feel dirty agreeing with
okay,
it.
Okay, that's fine.
In theory, sure.
Okay, and then we have Harker, who was the Dracula bitch.
Yeah, sure.
Awful.
Yeah,
really
pretty
bad.
But it's, you know, you have the vampire handicap.
Yeah, she has it's the vampire to, handicap. That's
well,
true.
And then we go back to Stuart Townsend, who was the only redeeming part of Queen of the Damned, which was a terrible film.
Yeah.
But he played the vampire part, all right?
Okay. Well,
I don't know.
I think she was handed a poor role because her acting was like
before
totally,
I knew she was a vampire.
Yeah,
I was down.
Exactly.
I was
but like, her acting was totally overshadowed by the scenes where the CGI kicked in and she looked like a bug.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of like ruined the fact that there was an actor there.
Sure.
And I'm clearly making a point with this, which is why I'm working backwards to the two actors that I think were the best in the film.
Right.
You got Nemo.
Okay.
Who I can't pronounce his name.
Sure.
I know his last name is Shaw, but he was incredible. He looks like the guy that plays Monk, but he's not the guy that plays Monk.
Right.
And he was a really good, like, I mean, because like that. He was just Nemo. That was all he was. So
he has a boat. And that's kind of
he doesn't
thing.
Have to have a role. And all he did was he walked the same, which is really, you know, that's consistency. All
right.
He walked the same. He talked the same in every scene. He played the same guy. And that's not to be said for most of the other people, like especially Shane West.
Yeah.
Shane West was a different character in every scene.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the part that, and this was my favorite part of the film overall, Skinner.
Uh-huh.
Who's the Invisible Man?
Yeah.
Not only him as an actor and not only like his voice, but the treatment of him with the computer stuff, I thought they did really well. Cause like when, like in the first scene when he puts his jacket on, it kind of looks awkward, but that's how it would totally look like because they did it in a way where they green screened the actor. They just put him in a big green suit and told him to put a jacket on.
Yep.
And then they just, you know, digitally left out the actor like the other actor who was left out of the film entirely.
In a lot of scenes, I found myself less interested in the movie and more interested in going, what would it look like if an invisible guy
the accuracy
did this
of-
thing? Okay, one more thing I gotta bring up is this ending. Now, so we just ended that little segment and you got up and we were gonna leave the room and I called you back in the chair because I looked down at my notes here which say ending at the bottom of the page. And I was like, oh yeah, remind myself to end the podcast. That's good. No, we gotta, what happened there? The last 5 seconds of this movie. What's that about? First of all, possibly the worst acting, CG, scripting, and every element of the
film.
That
was the worst.
Like, it was as if like, not even B unit, but like C unit was responsible for that. I can't let it go.
Should I talk about the apparent, three film contract that all the actors signed? Is that?
Yeah. Bring that right in. All right.
So there was apparently, this film was supposed to have 2 sequels and,
not going to happen,
which is why the ending, you know, implies
ambiguous.
Ambiguous my ass.
Right. Well, by ambiguous, I expected Sean Connery's hand to reach out of the grave and grab the gun.
Every time, like seriously, every time I watch the film, even though I've seen it at least 10 times, I'm like, oh yeah, his hand comes out and grabs the
rifle.
Yeah,
we're going to Nicky Impala this right here.
But no, there's going to be 3 LXG films and, But apparently, since there was so little buzz and Sean Connery retired from acting, they couldn't make a leg 2 or 3.
Yeah, that's pretty awful. That ending tacked on there was probably the worst part of the, no, definitely the worst part of the film. Maybe the worst part of all of the films we're ever going to see.
That's probably.
Can you think in your collection really quick of any scene?
Dude,
in any?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. All right. So that's officially the bar now.
Yeah.
You got to beat the Sean Connery no hand grab ending of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And that will make you the new worst scene in podcasting history.
Yeah, I got one in mind. So Constantine, where to start with?
Might as well get the bad out of the way because I'm about to have a Constantine love fest.
No, see, here's the thing about your Constantine love fest is I'm just going to laugh at you the whole time
talking
about the good points of this
film. That's absolutely fine.
Because I can literally sum up the good points of this film with 2 words, Peter Stormare. The entirety of the good part of the film is when he is like involved in the film.
Oh, okay.
Nothing before him was any good for me.
All right.
And once he was gone, I thought it ended 18 times.
It did end 18 times.
Then former Angel,
David Bowie. He was in 16 of the 18 endings though.
Well, yeah. So. Well, those were my favorite 16 endings.
Okay.
But yeah, so I guess, yeah, we'll start with the bad. Let's start with casting. Bad casting. Terrible.
Terrible casting?
Terrible casting. Keanu Reeves should have been Brad Pitt, Edward Norton, Clive Owen, Adrian Brody, anybody other than – and I like Keanu Reeves.
I'm trying to go over which of those. Yeah.
They all would have brought different things to the table.
Sure.
But here's the thing is Keanu Reeves brought nothing to the table.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves fulfilled the role of the title character, which is fine.
Which he really kind of didn't.
Well, that's what I mean. He filled the role, like literally. Like they're like, we need a guy to play John Constantine.
Sure.
And so they pick Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Horrible choice for him.
Sure.
And he was the lead.
Right.
Then they chose Shia LaBeouf, who is – of the top 10 most obnoxious actors, number -4.
Yeah. You don't need any convincing over here.
No,
I'm right there with you on that.
I'm going to pose this question because I mentioned it to you during the film. How does Shia LaBeouf get into films? Is he like, because he's not necessary in any of the films he's in. It's like they write the film and then they're like, and then Shia LaBeouf walks in and he's like, hey, you want me to play Shia LaBeouf in the movie or something? Like, I don't know if that's like, whatever, I'm Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, right.
And then they're like, yeah, sidekick. And he's like, well,
I think actually your Shia LaBeouf voice needs to be about, I don't know, a couple steps up instead of down.
Well, I still have.
And a little more neurotic, I think.
Both my balls have dropped.
All right. Well, that could be a problem if you're going to start doing impressions.
But so.
Hold on. Can we stay with motives for a second? Because I actually have a comment on that. As far as when you're making a film and and why you put certain elements into the film.
Yeah.
So two things struck me as you were talking about that. One, yeah, maybe there's just a sidekick inserted because, you know. He wasn't busy that week, and yeah, they were like, hey, he's not doing anything. Let's just pop him in the film. Also, there is a point where they're talking about water and the lubrication and the transition between Earth and Hell. I don't want to call the film out on this, but kind of just seems like an excuse to have Rachel Weisz in a wet t-shirt for half of the film.
I'm really glad you brought that up because as I'm going through my list of casting, Rachel Weisz, other great choice.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Wet Rachel Weisz, fine.
You know, absolutely.
Rachel Weisz playing two characters, great. Lindsay Lohan playing two characters, awful.
Yeah, bad.
I thought the casting was bad. And a lot of actors that I'm familiar with were in this film. Digimon, I like him as an actor.
Sure.
He was fine in the film, but didn't give him a role.
Like, no Gavin Rossdale for you, huh?
Gavin Rossdale was terrible.
His character, I think, was poorly written.
Well,
I mean, it was one-liners, you know?
Gavin Rossdale was a really bad actor.
All right, well.
I could watch Gavin Rossdale act, and that was bad.
I would need to see him in something else before I make that call. Well, it was all comic book dialogue. It was all like, yeah, fire. I was born in that. Get it? Because I'm from hell.
No, I didn't like the part where he like licked his fingers and then did the standard typical I'm partially devil hiss.
One of those. Yeah.
Finger-licking right. Good.
Yeah, finger licking good.
Glycerine.
Comic book lines.
Finger licking glycerine. LXG CGI, definitely more believable. However, maybe not better.
No, you know I would what I definitely mean? Say not.
Like the LXG, right. The LXG CGI is supposed to look more realistic, whereas in Constantine, it doesn't really matter because it's not something that you're able to compare the real alternative to. Which is something that the director has apparently done before in a film called I Am Legend.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second.
I'm going to digress before we get into I Am Legend to point out the other things that the director has achieved, like the Britney Spears DVD and the two Janet Jackson DVDs and the two J-Lo DVDs and the OK Go DVD.
All right, music video director. That was my only point there. Okay. It wasn't detrimental to
the film. No, it really wasn't. And I don't think, I mean, it shows when you're looking at it. But I mean, like you said before we watched it, you're just like, it's a big perfect circle video.
Yeah, no, it's.
And it wasn't until the end.
Well, it's not so much a perfect circle video as it was just a music video.
Yeah.
But I just remember the prominent like product placement of the Perfect Circle song. Sure. Right in the middle, which, by the way, the mix on that, whatever like club reverb 5.1 thing they had going on there was great.
It was really killer.
It was awesome. I wanted to go back to the conversation we were having earlier about the kind of models versus CG and the different looks. And I think that's, you know, it's great to have this contrast between these two films because I think that's where this film succeeds really well in that it attempts to go straight for fantasy, right? Mm-hmm. Heaven and hell, clearly elements of fantasy. and rather than try and go for realism, it goes for a look that, you know, in the future, people might take the look, try and adapt it, do different things with it. It's not necessarily that it's going to be done better or worse. You know, Constantine, I want to say, was made around the same time, maybe a couple years later. And I've only seen it the once. Yeah. I saw it. I remember having a good time when I saw it. And so I bought the DVD the week it came out. Mm-hmm. So this is my second time seeing the film. In retrospect, like I remembered today before we watched it. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking it was awful. And my feelings obviously now are not the same. But I think the CG, like I was kind of planning on the CG looking bad before we saw it.
Yeah.
And I think it holds right up. If that movie came out today, no one would be like, what's wrong with that CG?
It was totally, and it did come out. It came out like 3 months ago. It was called I Am Legend. And
I have to totally disagree with you on that.
I Am Legend.
So you have the demon thing.
Yeah, right. The demon thing.
But, well, first of all, the demons in Constantine look way better than the whatever those
yeah,
were supposed
that's
to be in
true.
Iron Legend.
The semi-zombie
right,
smart.
You have a bit of a hang-up with CG creatures, which I totally understand.
Not all the time. Well, okay, hold on. I'm going to just quickly.
Can you?
Yeah, no, I do.
Yeah.
All the time. Every time. CG
and
creatures.
That's totally
they
fair.
They bug the shit out of me.
This is weird because this is the first time one of us really definitely did not like
yeah.
a film and
well,
the other
no,
definitely
no, no, no.
Did.
Wait. I'm going to surprise you at the end of my rant.
Oh. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So the direction for the first four-fifths of the film, I don't think the director directed photography.
Okay.
Because the director of photography was incredible.
Yes.
In this film. The direction of the film was terrible.
As far as what?
As far as like acting and as far as whatever the director's decisions were to make choices, make cuts, and leave
right.
things in
sure.
and out of the storyline. I'm going to ask you three questions.
Three of them.
What's the plot of this film?
What's question number two? Let me handle them in order of what I am
okay,
best
so,
versed in.
Question number two is I don't remember question number two.
Okay,
I'm going to move
number
question number three up to question number two.
Okay, excellent.
What the fuck with the God gun?
Okay, God gun, terrible.
What the fuck?
Awful. I will submit to that immediately.
And also double what the fuck because Keanu Reeves built it at a workbench.
Yeah. Yeah, not sure what was going on there.
It
was scrap parts in the back of a bowling alley, and
yeah.
somehow that turned into a golden Jesus gun.
Yeah, with a little tiny cross in the barrel.
Yeah.
One of the barrels.
No, that was pretty much the worst prop ever conceived.
Yeah.
However, it did give them an excuse to have that wicked shotgun scene where there's just the crowd of people and he's just like, it's like that semi-slow-mo kind of just one after
better?
The other. What?
The dragon's breath, noisy cricket.
I know. Why didn't we get to – was there any dragon's breath?
No.
We got noisy cricket instead of dragon's breath. Yeah. I feel a little cheated.
Yeah. The dragon's breath was just noisy cricket.
Do you think
it was a longer – the gun
right.
was physically a longer noisy cricket.
Yeah.
The noisy cricket is a weapon from the film Men in Black.
Not from I Am Legend.
If you're unfamiliar with the term noisy cricket.
Yeah, well.
So I'll remember question number three. And then I'll revisit question number one because
okay.
clearly you have no answer.
All right.
well,
no, the plot of the film. Okay. So I'm going to try and deliver it to you in
three sentences.
One, there are these two elements. And these have been borrowed and used in other fictional stories.
Mm-hmm.
God and the devil. Okay. So there's God and the devil. They're apparently at war because that's what like omnipotent super beings or whatever do. Okay. Who cares? And some kind of dagger, and then I got nothing.
Yeah, there's no plot in this film. The film, here's the plot from literally just watching the film the first time
sure.
and going, thinking through the course of the film, where is this film going?
Uh-huh.
This is the plot. The Spear of Destiny is the spear used to kill Jesus.
Right.
Because Jesus didn't die from being crucified.
It's like if Oliver Stone did Passion of the Christ.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the Spear of Destiny.
All right.
And it gets found by Aziz from the Fifth Element when he's all grown up.
Okay.
And he finds the Spear of Destiny. Then Keanu Reeves, then it introduces Keanu Reeves as this guy who tried to kill himself. And succeeded, but then came back and then was like all had this ability to do nothing.
Sure, follow you so far.
And then he has a random encounter with Rachel Weisz, whose twin sister killed herself because she could also see these people.
Right, quick time video. I remember that. Sure.
Then Rachel Weisz is like, hey, Keanu Reeves, help me find my sister in hell. And Keanu Reeves does it, and then there's still more film.
Oh. Okay, but then...
And then you realize the conflict as it's resolved.
Yeah,
because
that's,
when the
yeah.
devil stands in front of Keanu Reeves and goes, what do you want? Keanu Reeves goes, put her sister in heaven. You go, that's what this is about?
Yeah.
And then the film ends three more times. Question number three. What does the chair do? The chair... Papa Midnight's chair from his back room.
Papa Midnight's magic chair.
Yeah.
What the chair does, okay, so remember, he goes in the chair, and then it allows him to see where the scavenger guy has the dagger and
spear
what he's
of destiny.
This right, the dagger of non-existence.
I believe if it were a Tenacious D song, it would be the spear da-na-na-na of destiny child.
I was just going to let you keep going with that. So let him see like what was going on so that he could go find the guy, and that way Satan's son wouldn't come back. And
so
Gabriel is played by a woman. I don't know.
So the chair allows you to see
the future.
Beyonce's spear. Oh, the future.
I got nothing. I don't know. It's a comic book movie. Right, the point is that Dr. Doom has some evil robots and he's trying to take over the universe.
All right. Well, I'm just gonna wrap up my slaughterfest of Constantine.
Oh, please.
With the fact that I totally enjoyed the film and it's a really great popcorn flick that I would watch with friends.
Yeah.
But never ever in my life seriously consider as a real film.
I will give the film credit for a couple things. When you have a film that's based kind of in fantasy, you sort of blur the lines between, well, pseudoscience, basically, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you blur the lines between things that exist and things that don't. And sometimes, you know, there are people outside of the movie theater, outside of the film environment who, well, here's a really good one, right? All right, so there's two things in the film on it from kind of a skeptical angle that would have sort of bothered me. And I think one of them at least was tackled well. You have the whole the parapsychology of the twin link.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that twins can feel each other's pain and suffering.
I'm going to stop you just for 1 second and point out that a couple nights ago, Dave and Corey and mm-hmm. myself watched I Know Who Killed Me.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I Know Who Killed Me is?
Oh, I'm well aware.
It's apparently the worst film of the year.
Uh-huh.
I could watch 20 minutes and then got up and left.
Oh, man.
Because the quality, like the filmmaking quality itself, just shit. Like, uh-huh. looked like it was done with a mini DV cam.
All right.
And the whole purpose of the film is the paranormal link between the twins of Lindsay Lohan and Lindsay Lohan.
Sure.
It's The Parent Trap 2 as a horror film.
Oh, no. Yeah, so you have that kind of like bubble of pseudopsychology. And man, we don't even have, that would be a whole nother podcast, mm-hmm. even. There are entire podcasts dedicated to debunking that kind of so-called phenomenon. So that's worth checking out. But so it didn't tackle that very well. But again, it's fantasy, whatever, I'll dismiss it.
Yeah.
The one thing I really enjoyed, a lot of times when you have kind of a comic book movie or a superhero movie, you have the point where the protagonist is trying to convince someone, usually the female lead, that they have some kind of power, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of times that's just done in a scene where the superhero kind of goes, hey, I have a power. And the other person's like, you couldn't. Oh, I guess you do for no reason. And in here, they did that really well with a really simple mechanic. The first time Constantine goes to hell, he grabs the medical bracelet, which he brings back with him. So you have the cop who was totally, you know, she was really skeptical about the situation. She wasn't really buying into the doctrine. But then once she leaves the apartment and comes back and Constantine is like, you know, was just on fire or whatever, smoking and has this bracelet, then she's kind of convinced. And I'm really glad they included that. You know, that was really the only point of that moment.
Yep.
And I'm glad they threw that in there because that's always a hard sell for me to kind of believe that for some reason the two leads in the film just kind of one just believes the other for no reason now. And it's something you have to accept. In being a giant music video, the editing, the visuals, and the audio mix in this blew my mind.
The audio was incredible.
Yeah. I don't know who did the audio mix.
Hand that over.
You know, sometimes I think as a mainstream audience, people will find actors they like, and they'll see movies with the other actors. Film geeks kind of find directors they like. You know, we do a bit of both.
Yeah.
I would find out who did the audio mix on this and go see their other films.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Right from the opening scene where he's hit by the car.
Yeah.
Like, I had to move the speaker because it was too close to me. I was like, I'm not going to be able to take a whole film of this. My heart is like beating out of my chest. The character Angela comes back after they have the bathtub scene, right? And you don't actually see her go there, but she comes back and she just has the freak out. And that's one of the few moments in the film, mostly the film's eye candy, right? But it's one of the few writing moments in the film I felt like was really good.
Yeah.
Someone having like a traumatic breakdown like that after just seeing something horrific. And she totally pulled it off.
Yeah.
And it was written in such a believable way. They could have gone so many other ways with it, but her coming back and she's just like, she's still inside her head, mm-hmm. you know, muttering all these almost nonsensical things and until she's just completely out of breath. I thought it was done really well. So visuals, eye candy, acting was a little weak here and there. But I think for what it was, being like you said, a kind of popcorn movie.
It's a popcorn flick.
for a film with integrity, maybe not so
much. I would definitely peg it higher than LXG.
Next time, I think we're one of the films we have is what I might regard as a high integrity film. What are we watching next time?
Next time, we're doing Memento from your collection.
Sure.
Which is the one I'm guessing you're talking about.
Right.
Although I feel equally the same about Hatchet from my collection.
All right. Well,
which
great.
Is the other film we're watching.
All right. So if you're going to listen to the next podcast, you should go see Hatchet and you should go see Memento. And come back and then you won't be spoiled. Everyone will have a fun time.
Watch more fucking film.
Bye.